League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day, call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let the lies be line. With a death wish, be right, didn't have no name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Texans review to get to or Texans preview to get to? Well, yeah, they played on Thursday night, so that was the one time. So this is the second Monday since like mid-September for the most part that we don't lead off with, man, the Texans played great, or man, the Texans played terrible, or man, the Texans are just meh. We got 5-6 more days before the Texans are back, either disappointing us or thrilling us, depending on how the game goes. So we will certainly talk about their opponent at some point throughout the week, because they have an opponent who's desperate to make the playoffs. So the Texans have that to go against, and maybe a quarterback playing the best football of his career. But that's down the line. As far as what happened over the weekend, where do we start? Do we start with what I consider an awful game plan by Sark? Because sure, the bracket takes precedent overall, it feels like. The games kind of go to the back burner once Sunday hits. We stop talking about what happened in the games and we start talking about who's going to be in the playoff bracket. But I feel like that might be overblown. I'm far more interested in talking about what happened on Saturday. The fact that in a game where Carson Beck is playing terrible, he gets hurt on the final play of the half, Texas loses a game where they, I think, should have won by a couple scores. Let's remove the non-block on the return for picks, potential pick six that could have been a sealer. Another play where Texas didn't take advantage of the situation, but I don't get why Sark decided he was going to test the strength of that Georgia defense. Why are two tight ends on the field as much as they were? Why are you in close formation so much, condensed formations? Even early on a drive that eventually didn't amount to a touchdown, when he threw the ball outside the numbers, there's a healthy fear of the Texas wide receivers from Georgia. They were willing, at least early, to let you work on the outside. And I know the man loves to drop a play. It's what he does. He is one of those people you would call a tactician and play calling and setting up plays. But sometimes I look at that game and go, your guys are better than those guys. Not every play needs to trick Georgia. I just think back to the fake screen one way, fake screen the other, resulting in a sack that short-circuited a drive. At points, I'm just looking at the game going, except that your quarterback's probably going to take some hits, but if he can get the ball out of there and you've got Golden, Bolden, and Bond lined up and throwing Moore and Wingo, throw all those guys out there, you're going to attack a matchup and go have that guy win. Whether it be a slant, whether it be a slot fade, I'll be honest, Quinn Ewers didn't throw the slot fade very well, but I was bothered by Sark's game plan. Stop trying to either have long, drawn-out pass plays or testing Georgia in these condensed formations. I thought it was a poor way to go about it. And the group chat that I was in, we have a Texas fan in it, that being Raheel. He said that Sark was going to be balanced because that was one of the things he wanted to focus on. I know you don't trust Quinn Ewers to drop back 45 times, I guess. But in that game, the quick game, where was it? Getting the ball out to those fast guys and making a Georgia guy miss and turning a 5-yarder into a 10-yarder. Testing them on slants. Testing them on go balls. It's things that Quinn doesn't have to think a lot about. I was bothered by the consistent willingness to go, you know what, I'm going to bring Georgia's front seven into this game. Make them a part of this game, where I would have tested their back five, their safeties, their corners, and see if they could hold up. And they didn't do it, and eventually became a Georgia type of game. Texas had a shot early to go put up a couple scores and change the complexion of that game, and they didn't do it. They allowed Georgia to find their rhythm, particularly in that second half. And of all people, Gunnar Stockton making enough plays. He wasn't good. That interception was awful. Well, Georgia knows that guy can't win a game for him. So they just asked him not to lose a game for him, and he almost did that anyway. So I took issue with the Sark game plan. I thought it was a poor way to use your talent, particularly when your starting left tackle is not playing. Sean, you watch the game. You watch all Texas games. What did you think of how Sark went about trying to win that football game?
It is a tough spot to be in, to be like, you can get after the Georgia secondary. The problem is you have to block the Georgia front to really take advantage of that. So they're like the wide receiver screen stuff, like they're going to be all over that.
Yeah.
Georgia's corners are safeties, more or less.
Pretty much. They're just big.
Great tackling.
Physical dudes, yeah.
Yeah, you see it in when they do the screen game or the little dump-offs. Like, they make the tackle. Like, they don't get bounced off of and miss the tackle or whatever. So you do have to go for, like, the Matthew Golden chunk plays, the slot fades in the red zone that Quinn Ewers can't throw.
Not anymore.
You do have to go with those. But to do that, again, you're – like you said, putting the ball in the hands of Quinn Ewers.
You have to accept that
every throw, there's like three things that could go wrong with Quinn Ewers.
Sure, I get it. But to beat a team like that, you have to accept that your quarterback's going to take a couple in the chops. He's also going to have chances to make plays, because that's what Georgia wants you to do.
Yeah,
they want you. I mentioned throwing short. Obviously, I didn't want that to be the entire game plan, but get your guys out in space. If they can make break a tackle, who knows? Who knows how far that play will go? But you watch Georgia consistently, and this is what you did with Alabama as well. Alabama, if you want to play them in a 10-yard box, they'll eat you alive. They're at their best. Despite the corners they put in the NFL, they're at their best in that box. But if you try to test them deep, it may go poorly for you, but you also have the chance to make big plays.
I mean, that was the only offense was deep balls. That was, and then the one DeAndre Moore RPO where he, like, fakes a screen and then slants.
Yeah.
And Georgia just leaves him.
He makes a safety miss, and he goes and he goes and scores. So,
I mean, but I think that speaks to, like, that goes into why they couldn't score in the red zone, was because
they couldn't run the ball and they couldn't trust Quinn in tight spaces.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to that guy's arm.
And the screen stuff just doesn't,
like, everything doesn't fly. He threw up there was a soft toss, like a paper airplane.
Yeah.
And you can't trust that arm in tight windows or that decision maker in tight windows. So
yeah,
that's
he just
problem.
Doesn't have, like, a fastball.
Yeah.
Like, he has good arm strength where, like, he can float one deep, but he doesn't have, like, zip.
He's
like,
not going. Yeah, tight window throws aren't going to be his thing, and that's what you have to do in the red zone. And if you can't run the ball, that hurts your cause. I get it. You're in the ball game. It went to overtime. And if Auburn can make a kick or two, maybe that's, we're not even having this conversation.
That's why, like, honestly, like, it was a little bit of a microcosm of, like, why people are like, on Quinn Ewers. But he didn't play bad. Like, he wasn't a reason they lost. If anything, it was the reason they were in it.
He's not the reason they lost. It's just, let's say, an uninspiring performance by the quarterback and the play callers, in my estimation.
And that's, like, the whole Quinn Ewers experience, where you can cut up, like, man, he made some great throws where he put it on guys down the field. But, like, when you need a guy to make a play, it's like he's – I was thinking, like, he's like a jugs machine. If you don't know what jugs machine is, it's for anyone out there. It's the, you know, machine that you put a ball into and just poof, and it shoots it out. That's kind of what Quinn Ewers is, where it's like he can just sit there and just make a throw. Like, I'm sure he looks great in shorts, where you can just sit there. Oh, you want me to throw it there? Cool, throw it there. But when you need him to, like, make a play, like, off script, that's when things, like, things can go wrong. When you need him to have pocket presence, that's where things can go wrong. Identifying a blitzer, things can go wrong.
There's a lot of things can go wrong.
Yeah, but if you just stand and throw, clean pocket, stand and throw, he's got that.
Yeah, I'm not saying there wouldn't be a risk in handing him the football and asking him to make plays. Because
I agree with you.
The front of Georgia can cause problems. I would just say, hey, spread him out, let him identify a matchup, and go there.
At a certain point, I was texting my friends. I was like, hey, you know what? I think we're good on the two straight run plays. Yeah. Like, I don't think we should ever do two straight run plays.
Why are you putting Quinn Ewers in third and long situations and hoping he wins on that down?
You're just signing up for third and eight. Yeah. Like, that's what you're doing when you do that. So, I think they could have won. That's the whole, like, thing where you're like, I don't think Texas played well at all. Georgia didn't play well either. And it went to overtime.
Yeah.
And you're like, And as I said, Gunnar Stockton was the better quarterback.
Of the three, which is a problem. He threw an awful pick, and he was still the better, at least the better Georgia
better
quarterback.
Better Georgia quarterback by far.
Yeah.
Was there a chance that Beck and Ewers were the third and fourth best quarterbacks on the respective teams?
Well, Arch didn't do enough. But on the day, if Arch got more opportunities, particularly if you're going to try to implement some quarterback run because of what you saw Georgia Tech do to Georgia the week before, maybe, but he just didn't have the opportunities.
That's what Steve Sarkisian said in the postgame. He was like, you know what, we probably should have gotten Arch more involved.
That's comforting to everyone.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, you know, imagine like any other coach being like, you know what, I wish we played our backup quarterback more.
Yeah.
That's
I don't like you wishing. If you had the thought, just do it as opposed to talking about it after.
And like Quinn Ewers just like, wait, what? What was the plan?
As long as your backup quarterback's doing the Tebow thing, then maybe Quinn doesn't have a problem with it. But yeah, we probably should have played Archmore. What does that mean? Are we giving him a series, or are we just putting him in on third and shorts and where you want to add an extra body to run the football?
It is unconventional. I would not mind him as just you get the ball to the 25. Now it's Arch Manning time, where he can make those tight windows throws. He can run the ball. It just like adds an element to your offense that you can't get with, you know, trying to scheme open a Gunnar Helm screen pass.
Yeah, or the pass interference, offensive pass interference where you're trying to get Helm down the sideline on a wheel.
Yeah,
stuff
but
like
that's
that,
like, you know, you have to like Mickey Mouse your way to an open receiver.
Yeah,
so Quinn can hit it and he doesn't.
And you can't look like it's an OPI. Yeah. You hope Quinn doesn't lead him out of bounds, or Gunnar Helm has to get his feet situated and then drop the ball anyway. Things like that. Yeah, that's part of my issue. I think your receivers could have won some of those one on ones. It just so happens that they took a different approach. And look, and they lose a tight one. They lose the bye, and they now will host Clemson in their first round matchup. So you get the ACC champion who I won't even say man for man is as good as Texas, certainly, but as far as a program understanding the moment, Clemson won't be overwhelmed by going into Austin.
I mean, you basically saw that in the ACC title game. We're in the first 10 minutes of the game, you're like, oh yeah, one of these teams has won 7 of these in the last 10 years.
They will know what the moment is, as opposed to SMU had to kind of get themselves into it and eventually led to a late game comeback and then the walk-off kick by Clemson, which put the CFP committee in an awful position. So I'm sure they were hoping that game would go one way or the other. SMU wins or Clemson blows SMU out. So they didn't have to make the decision they made last night. So the bracket as it stands, Texas hosts Clemson.
Clemson doesn't want to play in Austin in December.
Yeah. I was hoping for Dabo in the snow if he was going to win. We don't get that. We get Dabo in, 50 degree weather at best.
Yeah,
at worst.
I was hoping for the night game, you know, so it really gets down there to
it feels like
40,
43.
Yeah,
feels like weather's 43. The rest of the bracket goes like this. You have Tennessee going to Ohio State, so that'll be a Southern team in a cold weather spot. SMU, another Southern team going to Penn State. And then you have the Battle of Indiana, Indiana at Notre Dame. And obviously, if you missed it, the byes go to Arizona State with their big win against Iowa State, blew out Iowa State in the Big 12 title game. Boise State won on Friday at home against UNLV. Georgia, they're the 3 seed. Georgia's the 2 seed with their win over Texas, and Oregon is the 1. So the conference championship losers weren't punished to the point where they're either out, like people thought SMU would be, and this show thought, although I did not predict the walk-off 55-yard field goal after the stirring comeback as a potential you know, fly in my ointment of the committee never letting SMU in if they lost, no matter how it went.
By the way, Clemson has 2 kickers, and one of them just is the kickoff guy, and they let him try the 50. That's what I gathered from the
broadcast. Yeah, I heard throughout the broadcast they have 2 strong leg kickers, but one of them is has a stronger leg, so he takes those.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway,
either way, it worked out for him.
How would you like to drive a Lambo in Austin?
Yeah, get Bert. Is he a senior or is he just not?
I think he's a. I still
got to deal with Bert Auburn for
him. He has. Oh, you don't have to deal. Well, these things can deal with themselves.
That's true. Somehow,
24 Dell.
Somehow, Bert Auburn has made a decision about his future that doesn't involve staying at Texas.
You know
Look
what?
I
want to explore other opportunities at Tulsa.
Tulsa, huh? You want to spend time in Tulsa, huh? Look at that. So
finish my degree up.
Yeah, at Tulsa.
That
degree is more valuable than the one he could have gotten if he stayed at Austin. He better come up with a better excuse if that's the way it goes down. I don't know if Bert Auburn's going to go, but he did not bathe himself in glory on Saturday afternoon as Georgia beats Texas in overtime, thanks to the hanging arm of Carson Beck as he hands the ball off. To be honest, is it Kwiatkowski? How you pronounce the last name?
Yeah, Kwiatkowski.
Kwiatkowski, you didn't inform your linebackers that guy can't throw the ball.
What, once
play I, the run, just play the run.
Once they'll
sell out for the
first and goal from like the
I knew
three.
It was over. Yeah, I knew they were going.
No, but even when I saw him walking on there with his arm hanging, look at me moment. Mm-hmm. It was completely fine when he was standing on the sideline,
sure.
But then jogging onto the field makes him have to.
He was like moving it, showing it to everyone, but when he got on the field, he couldn't even lift it.
I was like, they're going to score a touchdown with Carson back on the field.
Of course, that's how this game is going to play out. Gunnar Stockton almost got knocked out, his helmet goes off, and the next play.
Dirtiest hit I've seen in 6 days.
Does there need to be an investigation? Do we need to investigate that?
Yeah, yes, and we need Von Miller to hear the appeal.
That's an you didn't want to get a more current Aggie?
Nah.
No. What's Mike Evans up to?
Okay. Get one of the Shamars to do it. Shamar Turner, Shamar Stewart.
I didn't mean an active Aggie. I just meant a more current one. Certainly not Johnny Manziel. He's spending too much time in a bathtub with Jose Canseco's daughter, if you missed that on the internet. talking about their love, and he has to post them sitting together in the bathtub in bubbles.
I mean, that's what you expect him to be doing, to be fair.
Look, I don't blame him. Yeah, right. But I'm just, I don't
be
know
surprised
why.
Surprised if he wasn't.
I don't know why it's being posted on social media. I hope Johnny Manziel is the arbiter of all things fair and equal in college football going forward. Like, just make him the czar. Everyone's talking about how we need a new president because a president of college football because things are so out of whack. I nominate Johnny Manziel. We need a name that'll bring people together. Everyone loves Johnny, right?
Everyone loves him.
Yeah, Johnny Manziel. Living his best life, and congratulations to him. So we'll get more into what happened. A lot of SEC love. I mean, I could use a different word for it, but it's only 10:22. it was amazing. I didn't know that 20 years of dominance would breed such sycophants that no one can just take a step back and go, you know what? It's fine that SMU's in it. Like, everyone's singing the praises of the strength of the schedule, and I'm thinking to myself, obviously, they didn't handle it very well. It was too strong for them. They lost to Vanderbilt and Oklahoma. So sure, the strength of schedule is strong, but they didn't handle it. So if you don't handle your tough schedule, why are you being congratulated for it? By the way, for all the talk about how good Vanderbilt was, beyond the fact they finished 6-6, they have a road loss to Georgia State, a 3-9 Georgia State team. So before we talk about how tough the SEC is, that team who beat Alabama lost to Georgia State in what was known as Fulton County Stadium. Georgia State plays in the ex-baseball field.
They play at Turner Field? Or did they play at the old one?
No, it's probably Turner Field. Not the old one. The old one.
I was going to say they played like. No. I'm just picturing it dilapidated.
I just think that's
like where Hank Aaron.
It's more dramatic to say they played there. It's Turner Field they play at.
Okay.
They refurbished Turner Field so they could play their games there. Sweet. That's where the team who beat Alabama lost earlier in this year, and we're talking about how strong the SEC is. Cut it out, everybody. Sick.
I do think it's disgusting what the committee did. Why play a tough schedule? Alabama's gonna. I agree with Alabama AD Greg Byrne. No more hard out of conference games.
But you aren't out of the playoff because of your hard out.
No more.
You're out of conference. You're out of the playoff because you lost what would be considered easy games in conference.
Yeah, but you know what? I think now Alabama's gonna start scheduling Mercer. And now they're going to start.
Yeah, I mean, how's
maybe just in the middle of the conference season. Wouldn't that be crazy? Yeah. Just as like a, you know, half bye week.
Yeah.
Where right before a big game, you schedule like an FCS team. I mean, if that's what we're doing.
Yeah. You know? I mean, I could see Tennessee playing Chattanooga at some point in the near future.
That'd be crazy. I mean, they'd
nuts.
Kill them.
But nuts. Okay. We're going to stop scheduling tough teams. Relax.
Are they going to try to get Oklahoma off the schedule?
Maybe Vanderbilt. Maybe Vanderbilt's off the schedule.
He probably just thinks Oklahoma's still a Big 12 school. That's probably what it is.
I don't think he's so tuned out like Jim Phillips is, the ACC commissioner, who was talking about current teams in conference having Jordan Travis as a quarterback,
yeah.
The former Florida State quarterback. I think Greg Byrne's more tuned in than that, but I think the argument his argument that he put on social media telling the world that, hey, I'm disappointed about this out. And Alabama's going to have to reevaluate how they schedule. Okay. Sure.
Yeah.
Great.
Maybe you try to get a Big Ten team that's, like, bad and misses a bowl.
You mean, like, Wisconsin? You mean team they played earlier this
year? Oh, yeah. And, well, you know, it's unfair, though.
Yeah.
They had to go to Wisconsin.
Sorry you played two of the poorest teams, not money-wise, but as far as quality-wise, Oklahoma and Vanderbilt and lost, and that cost you the playoff. I mean, it's a real shame. It's a real shame you couldn't get that done.
Stop scheduling those games. Ole Miss has to stop scheduling Kentucky too.
Yeah.
By the way, all three teams Texas beat, and their trash ass schedule.
Texas found a way to get it done.
Yeah,
by the way,
like, oh, I don't know. That's
yeah,
weird.
They weren't able to beat Georgia, but you know why they're in the playoff beyond the name of Texas, which certainly plays a part.
Hey.
They beat. It's true. They beat the teams that they were supposed to beat. You're allowed. As Alabama to drop a game here and there. Maybe you want to drop a game to Tennessee. And you could have dropped your game to Georgia. Just don't lose to Vandy and Oklahoma. And your Georgia win or loss would have still allowed you to make the playoffs because that would have been a good loss.
I mean, also, do you really want to like start comparing like Vanderbilt and Oklahoma versus all the teams that SMU beat? Like. At least they beat those.
Yeah, it's not really a compliment to you. Their schedule might not have been great, but they beat the teams they're supposed to. You did not. So bad losses should mean something, and they did this year. We'll see what happens after the SEC whines and complains and they reformat the playoff in multiple ways. The most likely one right now is removing automatic buys from the equation. Automatic entry, but removing the buys for conference winners.
I think what they should do is just expand to – I mean, they will.
20?
Oh, or I was going to say like 14. 14 or 16. That way you don't get the like weirdness of the one seed has like the hardest path.
Yeah.
Which is what you have.
Yeah, and I'm interested to see how it plays out this year, whether it'll play out that way, because I think maybe accumulation of games, playing games might be a bigger factor than what people are taking into account. Sure, the thought of Penn State hosting SMU feels like, man, Penn State's got it much easier than the team they lost to in the Big Ten title game. But that is an extra game, and we don't know how these teams are going to respond to multiple games. We'll see if the teams who play, even if they have quote-unquote easy games in the first round, how well they play.
Yeah. And once
playing
you get
a team
game,
in the quarterfinal.
And once you get to game like 15, 16, and 17, that's going to matter.
Yeah.
Like, we have never seen
attrition
guys
is going
play
to,
that one.
Attrition's going to play a part. So I would say let's get through year one before we start complaining so much about how the Big Ten champion has an easier path or a harder path than the Big Ten runner-up. Okay, we are done with segment one. If you want to get in on the show, 713-780-3776. We'll continue to talk college football will get into what was, at least in my eyes, a rough watch. Watching KPJ be the leader of an offense, bad memories. The Rockets going to L.A. and take on the Clippers without Kawhi, obviously, or as has been the case all year long. And then they also took on the Clippers without James Harden. But they didn't have Fred VanVleet, so we'll talk about that when we come back. But first, let's talk about Aqueduct Plumbing. Aqueduct Plumbing Company is the place you go to if you are having issues with your water, with the leak, with your water heater. They take care of all that. So you don't know how to fix that. I don't know how to fix that. So when I have a problem, that's who I'm calling. And you can call them. Excuse me as I wait for this phone number to come up. You can call them at 281-488-6238. You get a free price quote. They'll come out there, check it out, and see what the issue is. So if it's big or small, that's the company you call. Or go to the website and check out all they have to offer at aqueductplumbingcompany.com. So I mentioned a leak or something with your water heater. Maybe you need a repiping. They've done over 1,000 of those. They are experienced contractors. They get the job done. You welcome them into your home, and you're going to leave. And they're going to leave your home with a problem fixed. No worries from you. And what you don't want is dirty, smelly, disgusting water, because that water is the water you clean with. That's the water you take your baths or showers in. And Aqueduct Plumbing Company will make sure that water's clean. You turn on the faucet, you get the perfect water, you get the perfect experience. So remember, aqueductplumbingcompany.com is the website. Just go to aqueductplumbingcompany.com.
Is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So I watched Double Box. I was watching the football game, the Chiefs once again find a way, and also the Rockets and Clippers. And it was a throwback to watch Kevin Porter Jr., not a throwback to his time as a Rocket, but a throwback to a time where isolation middies were a thing that people were fine with. He was okay as far as the counting numbers were concerned, but his willingness to go dribble the shot clock out and then take a 17-footer and take his chances was something we don't see a lot in the NBA anymore. I don't know if that was strictly, hey, Jaylen's on the other side and my former team's out there, I'm going to show him what I can do. Or that's a product of not having James Harden available because he sat out. He was out. He was sitting there. You could see him in Steve Ballmer's new place. Kawhi was sitting right next to him. But watching that product was rough. And the Rockets were struggling with the Clippers up until late in the second quarter. I think they broke off a 12-2 run. They were up 52-50. Jaylen had a burst. Dylan Brooks knocked down a three, and they went from up 62-50 to 64-52 going into the half. And I believe the Clippers never got any closer than 6 points the rest of the way, 6 or 8 points the rest of the way. So the Rockets just kind of kept batting them away anytime Bones Highland knocked down a three. I can't imagine that's what Ballmer was looking for. Sunday night, there weren't a lot of people in the building, at least for a new arena. You can understand why they wanted to keep Kawhi, although he doesn't play. They wanted to get people in that building. And the thought of Norman Powell having to take over, can't think that's what he was looking for.
Me sitting there being like, let Kevin Porter Jr. cook. I don't want any part of Norm Powell. Norm Powell, that's how they make a run.
If I had to make my choice, you had to make your choice. You'd rather see Kevin Porter Jr. try to do his thing.
Yeah. Try to play like Allen Iverson for some reason.
Yeah. And for the Rockets, the defense, particularly in that fourth quarter where they went a little silent, scoring. They only scored 22 points in that fourth quarter. Their defense was enough. I'm not saying the Clippers made them work that much. It was just it was just a case where they played right into the Rockets' strength. They're an athletic team who can get after you one on one. If you're not going to move the ball at all, and you're just gonna try to take Amen off the dribble, or even Jaylen will compete, and obviously Dylan Brooks will do his thing. You were playing right into them. I mean, and thanks to the Clippers, the Rockets, who weren't at their best, they shot the ball pretty well. They win that one going away.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not even sure if it was like the Rockets' defense was enough for them to keep, you know, hold on. Not a hold on, but, you know, to maintain their lead.
Sure.
In the fourth quarter, I actually think it was the Clippers' offense was enough for the Rockets to maintain. Like, they didn't challenge them at all. Like the Clippers didn't do anything that, like, put the Rockets in, like, conflict or, like, in some, like, scramble mode. And I get it. Like, we're talking about Bones Highland and Kevin Porter Jr., a little bit of Norm Powell mixed in. So, like, this isn't exactly the Steph KD Warriors. And when it comes to ball movement and, oh, my God, we have to guard this guy. Like, there's still a lot of Chris Dunn out there. But, this team. I mean, especially with no James Harden. Like, the Rockets have no business losing to this Clippers team, and they didn't.
No.
They took care of business.
Bouncing back from
professional
their,
win.
Yes, bouncing back from their two losses, one on the West Coast, and they've now taken three from the first three from the Clippers. And, yeah, you just want to say that's the way you see a weakened opponent, even when you don't have your starting point guard. You go out there and just take it from them. You win that game. You get back on track. You don't let this become a prolonged losing streak. And now you're 16-8. Credit to Jalen Green. As I said, he was part of that burst to give them a big lead going to the fourth quarter. Had a good night. 31 points on 20 shots. You'll take that all the time. And it's kind of the tease. I guess what you would say is the hope. The hope that this is what he's going to be going forward. And I'm not at a point where I'm, oh, well, this is going to be a turnaround. I've seen it before. It's a one-off. But you at least like that he showed it last night, because there are times when he is bad, just awful. We've talked about how good this team might be if they had a league average backcourt, as far as you compare Van Vliet and Green to the rest of the backcourts in the league. If they could find an average one, how much better would they be? Well, he was great last night without his backcourt mate. And Şengün had a quiet night. Zubac's kind of a tough guy to deal with. He's a big, strong guy, and he wasn't bad. 21 points for the Clippers center. So Amen Thompson, credit him for jumping in. 22 points. And there was one play in the game where the Clippers are trying to make a run. Now, it didn't result in a Rockets make, but the Rockets are struggling offensively, and the Clippers came away with the defensive rebound, and he just stuck one arm out and raked it away from, I think it might have been Bones Highland. He just stole it from him. Highland thought he was going to be able to go down the court, wasn't aware that Amen was lurking, and just stuck his arm out, just pulled it right away from him. It led to a jumper that didn't go down. Just his ability to create extra possessions, had three offensive rebounds. Just a guy who actually they ran some stuff for. He went and got his own offense, but they made sure to feature him a little bit, being in the starting lineup, and he came through.
Yeah, and seeing the difference it's not like a knock on Fred VanVleet, but just like the level of like athleticism that you get, the trade-off you get when you take out Fred VanVleet and put in Amen Thompson. It's just like, oh my God, this guy's awesome. But yeah, there's still some of the kind of more nuanced like basketball stuff he still needs to work out, which is fine. It's what, like game like 60 of his career, because he missed so much of last year. So you do want a little bit more of like the actual point guardiness. I'm not entirely sure if he's the point guard of the future or if he's a wing player that can do some point guard stuff, but he's not like a actual point guard. I mean, every time that Fred VanVleet sits, which I think has only been two games this year, the Rockets turnovers just like skyrocket. Like they just, that I think what they had 15, I want to say.
Yeah.
They had 15 turnovers to the 8 for the Clippers. The Clippers were barely passing the ball. That's a great way to limit turnovers.
As long as you get a shot up at the rim, it's not a turnover.
But yeah, the Rockets, I mean, I think they had like 20 against the Wizards when Fred VanVleet was out. So that's really the kind of next point I'm thinking about, just the next time Fred VanVleet misses a game, is like, can we get these young guys who are going to be the core of this team if we think the Rockets are going to move on for Fred VanVleet, or at least at the very least they'll opt him out and then re-sign him at a lower rate and have, you know, de-emphasize him from the offense. Will this team go from one of the best teams when turn in terms of not turning the ball over to like, oh, this is just a team that turns the ball over a lot? And now they miss shots, and now the offense kind of seesaws into, ooh, this is actually not sustainable, where if you don't turn the ball over. You're just getting a shot every time. You can shoot a little bit worse, but you're just getting more shots.
Yeah.
So
they're rebounding.
And their
ability not to turn the ball over helps their offense, particularly when it has, well, not a night like last night, but they're generally how their nights go when they don't shoot the ball very well. So they have found ways to mitigate that. Some of their ability to get out in the open court has helped as well. Tari Eason didn't play. He's recovering from a concussion, so we'll see how long he's out. The one guy I did take a look at is Reed Sheppard, and there's a hesitancy there to shoot. Not that I didn't really expect. He was 0-for-3. He's not shooting the ball well, so you can expect some of that from a young player, but that's a guy I would like to see let it fly a little bit more. He's turning down what I would consider open looks, at least open looks for what we consider to be a knockdown shooter, and he's not going to get many opportunities in his 11 minutes. So I understand not being a guy who wants to be looked at as the chucker, but I'm not sure what you're out there for if you're turning down threes.
And I wonder how much of it is like you said, 11 minutes where it's just not in the rhythm. He's just not in a rhythm when he's out there. I mean, you think about like Reed Sheppard, and he's not alone in this. This is what most rookies go through. But for their entire life, they play 80% of the minutes for their team, just all the way from high school, college,
AU. Unless you play for Coach Cal.
And, well, you know.
Last year.
Well, but he played.
He played a lot.
Yeah, he
just
played a lot.
Start, just didn't he didn't start. Start yeah.
He was the Monte Ginobili of the Kentucky Wildcats. And you can work yourself into a rhythm. You're just more used to, you know, that like if I shoot this, Ime Udoka won't yell at me or my coach won't yell at me. Coach Cal will not yell at me if I shoot this. And now he's in a situation where he's like, I think he's overthinking it a little bit.
And there were times where he turned down a good shot and took a worse shot because either the ball got back to him or now he dribbled himself into a contested shot late in the shot clock. So
they need a like April or March game where guys on both teams are sitting out and it's like Reed Sheppard, you're playing 32 minutes.
He winds up
tonight.
Starting or at least getting a lot of
Yeah, like he just needs a like absolutely far school NBA game to like, hey, listen. Be Cocaine Curry, all right? Be what everyone...
That nickname we gave you before the year started.
Yeah, be what everyone nicknamed you after we picked you and they decided it was a great pick. Like, do that.
Rookie of the year, the guy we thought was going to run.
Yes.
And then you showed out in summer league and we thought, look at him coming off picks, shooting the mid-range stuff, knocking down threes. Mm-hmm.
Be the guy that Sean Mapes has a rookie of the year bet in on.
Well, good luck with that one, Sean. Yeah. Ain't going well for you right now.
No, I think it's Jared.
I hope you didn't put at least the relative amount that the guy who bet $3.1 million on the Eagles.
No.
Whatever that fits.
It was one Abraham Lincoln.
One Abraham Lincoln. Well, I guess we're going to say goodbye and say, hey, man, that could have been an energy drink. I don't know if you drink them. I'm trying to think of something that's worth $5 now. Like, it's not a lunch.
Back in my day. Yeah.
I mean, back in my day. You can get.
That's like five things on the McDonald's.
It's a long time past now. We don't do that anymore. I don't know if you've heard. We don't do that anymore in these fast food streets. So Rockets get a win. Nice win for them. They have the day off. And we're getting ready for the NBA Cup. NBA Cup matchup against the Golden State Warriors as they try to not lose 16 in a row to the Warriors as the Warriors come to town in the quarterfinals of that prestigious tournament. And let's be clear, it's the Emirates NBA Cup. We got to make
we need to be better about that.
We got to make sure we acknowledge the sponsor. The Emirates NBA Cup is back. The Rockets in action on Wednesday against those Warriors. Okay, we will come back with this. Dana Brown spoke. Winter meetings. We know giant deals are getting done. Willie Adames is off the table. Juan Soto is a Met. Does that mean Alex Bregman is the next domino to fall? Well, we'll hear from Dana Brown on him and where they stand, and also whether the in-house replacements are anywhere near ready. But first, Sean's going to tell you about Prize Picks.
Yes, Prize Picks, America's number one daily fantasy sports app. And listen, it was a tough SEC championship game for my Longhorns. A lot of people are mad at Quinn Ewers. A lot of people are mad at Bert Arvin. I'm not, because I had Quinn Ewers to have more than 20 and a half pass completions. He had, I think, close to 30 or no, 27. I had Bert Auburn for 6.5 kicking points. It was an adventure to get there. It was harder than it needed to be to get to 6.5 kicking points for Bert Auburn. He got there. The Georgia kicker did his job too. So, and Georgia running back Nate Frazier also did his job, getting more than 39.5 rushing yards. And that's good for me to 4X my money. So a lot of people in my life were chirping me. A lot of people, so-called friends, were chirping me in my life, saying, "Oh, tough game for you." Less tough of a game because I made money watching that game on Prize Picks. You can too. It's the perfect time to get in on this. And you know what it is? It's Pickmas. It is Merry Pickmas on Prize Picks, and you can win up to 200 times your money on Prize Picks. See, I only won 4 times my money, and I'm happy. Imagine if I won 200 times my money. I might not be doing the show if I won 200 times my money. You can win 200 times your money on Prize Picks if you know your stuff. Just go to the go to your app store, download the Prize Picks app today. Use promo code MAPES to get $50 instantly when you play your first $5 lineup. That's promo code MAPES to win some money and get $50 on your first $5 lineup. Prize Picks, run your game.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios is the Del Olalea Show.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Del Olalea.
Before we get to Dana Brown on Bregman, Carson Beck has a UCL injury. Reports are that he is expected to miss the Sugar Bowl, which would be Georgia's next game. And they don't know who their opponent is yet. That is yet to be seen. It'll either be Notre Dame or Indiana. I'll ask you this, Sean. If yes. Georgia had not won the SEC title, would the timing of Beck's injury and not a lot of time to figure out what actually the issue was, would that have been the reason the committee kept Georgia in and ignored what happened or what they did to Florida State last year? Or would they have just said, Georgia's good enough with Gunnar Stockton, we're going to keep him in? I don't know which one they'd lean on.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it also depends on, like, how Gunnar Stockton looked. He looked fine. Like, he wasn't, like, awesome.
He looked no better than the
good enough
Florida State backup last year.
He looked
year
better than Brock Lynn. Louisville game?
They played an entire game and won the conference title. He played a half and threw an awful pick.
Yeah. That was terrible. The Louisville Florida State game last year was terrible.
Yeah, Florida State's defense was great. I don't think Gunnar Stockton looked any better for a half than those guys did in that game.
I don't know. I mean, he did score like what? They scored 16 of the.
I blame Texas more for
22
that.
Points.
I blame Texas more for
same
that.
Same Texas than defense. Carson Beck was.
Well, Carson
against.
Beck's terrible. I guess.
Yeah,
I
think this just turns into were both teams starting the wrong guy?
Yeah, maybe. Or Texas, for whatever reason, didn't adjust. And, you know, yeah. Georgia decided to play a little better, I guess. But
I mean, Gunnar Stockton looked like a better running quarterback than Marcel Reed. He was ripping off.
So I wonder. Can't happen. There would no chance of it happening because the automatic bid. If Georgia had lost, I don't think they would have had enough turnaround because there wouldn't have been enough proof how different Georgia is without Carson Beck.
If they would have just, like, you know,
if it happened in the Georgia Tech game,
or just like the pick six happened, like the Texas, like, they just pick sixed it,
yeah, and actually scored, yeah,
yeah, and then that's how they lost.
But you would still have to know because Georgia
and everything else happened the same way, like SMU still lost.
Yeah, everything happened except
because then
Texas
it would be like,
makes a play they should have made and they win the game.
Is there a chance that they? No, they wouldn't drop out.
No.
Georgia. I was thinking maybe they'd do the Georgia-Alabama flip. People would be big mad if they did that. Or if they didn't do that.
People would just be mad.
You know what? I wish that happened. I wish Georgia lost. That would have been awesome.
Let's see what they would have done.
Well, and also that means Texas won't SEC.
Yeah, you would have loved for Georgia to have lost for obvious reasons. But I don't think there would have been enough time. And it would have had to happen against Georgia Tech. If he had an injury in that game, and then they could have, Gunnar Stockton looked terrible against Texas. They could have maybe made that decision, but I don't think they would have done it.
Yeah,
anyway.
And you need like the full run up for the, and it sucks that this is like part of the playoff selection process, but you would need like the full 2 weeks of Alabama propaganda.
Sure.
And like readying it for, hey, if he stinks, you got to drop Georgia. Like, mm-hmm. Although I don't think this committee is like, I think this committee is better than ones we've had in the past.
The fact that they put SMU in may prove that. And would they have done it 2 years in a row? Would last year and them doing it prohibited them from doing it again?
I don't think they take precedent into account like at all, mm-hmm. or maybe a little bit, but I don't think they like. It's not the Supreme Court here. Like they can just go, oh, we think that team's better. Because it also rotates members every year. So it's not like it's not the same people deciding.
And the other thing is people getting really upset with them for how
how
the rankings went and the matchups. They're not the ones who created the rules. They just have to enforce them and put teams where they should. Right. They can't. Why are people getting upset with the committee for how difficult Oregon's path is? They're not the one who set that up.
What you want us to put Ohio State as the sixth seed?
What do you want from us?
Although I'm sure Ohio State fans are like, yes, we beat Penn State, but make us the sixth seed. But
you lost a bad and Michigan team, so no.
Yeah. I think that they did a good job. I was surprised because I have low expectations for these people. That's why we thought SMU.
That's why we thought Alabama was getting in as long as SMU lost.
And the manner they lost helps. It's like literally the example you give. Like, what if they lost on a 60-yard field goal at the very end? You're like,
oh. It's the one thing we didn't add into our math when we were saying no matter what happens if SMU loses, they are out. We didn't give the perfect scenario where they lose on a walk-off long field goal.
Do you like the fact that they said that they were not going to penalize the SEC or the conference championship game losers, and they actually like went out and did it? Like Texas, Penn State, Notre Dame were in the same order, or I guess they weren't in the same order in the rankings, but the seeds, they ranked them in the same order that they were going into conference championship Saturday.
Particularly because how the games went. Now, if you have a, as they like to say, data point that's overwhelming because one of the losers got their ass kicked, then maybe you have to downgrade them a little bit. But because of how those games went, competitive, ones in overtime, Penn State, a couple things go their way, although, of course, it's a James Franklin team, so they're never winning that type of game.
They had to try to do a Philly special.
Don't do that. You don't go for two for no reason. If things go their way, they could win that game. So I like the way they approached it. Let those games be for championships, not be punishments for being able to qualify for them. And that's kind of how it played out. And now we have our brackets, and people will have a couple weeks now before the first round games to complain about whatever they want to complain with. And then the games will start, and we'll stop complaining because that's how it works. But let's get to this before we go to break. I mentioned this. Alex Bregman, the big name for the Astros, will he come back? Will he find money and a lot more money elsewhere? Well, Dana Brown, winter meetings going on. Dana Brown spoke, and here is the latest, at least from the Astros GM, on Alex Bregman.
Look, Bregman's outstanding, you know, great defender, good bat, quality AB all the time, done great things here in Houston. We're working on it. You know, we're having a lot of conversations with Scott, and, you know, we're optimistic.
Optimistic. He has pretty much said that every time he's asked particularly since the season has concluded and he's now more available to speak. Good. I'm glad he doesn't feel like there's no chance. The initial reports say they are not worlds apart, but there's significant money differences between what Alex Bregman wants, allegedly, and what the Astros have offered. And they will continue to talk. Now that the Yankees lost out on Juan Soto, there's another team out there with a lot of cash to spend. One team off the board, you think, with the Mets. I mean, Steve Cohen has deep pockets, but I don't think Bregman is in the offing for them. So the Yankees are available to spend. Will they overspend to compensate for losing the biggest star in the market? Like, we got to get someone because I wouldn't put it past the Yankees to come over the top just to end all discussions. And I don't think Alex Bregman would turn it down. So there we are. The Yankees, unfortunately, are still out there.
And unfortunately.
Yes. For more than just Alex Bregman. Just unfortunately, they're still a franchise and they're out there. I could do without them, honestly.
Yeah, yeah. I do wonder how much of the a lot of people are saying, like, hey, they're ready to offer $750 million to Juan Soto. Now they have all that money to spend and expect them to be interested in Alex Bregman. I do wonder how much of that money is actually like, all right, now we have all this money that we're going to pay for Soto. Now let's pay for a bunch of different free agents. Because that's not what the Yankees did. I think the Yankees went that high because they didn't want to lose them to either the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, Dodgers, and the Mets. Literally the worst teams.
That was
he
big bank, little
bank, through.
Some pettiness involved. Those are our rivals. There's no chance. I don't think they're all of a sudden going to just be willing to spend.
Because that's not what they've done.
That across three different players. I don't think that's what they're going
to
do.
Yeah, so I don't know if you have to worry about like them. Because theoretically, they could offer three different guys $200 million contracts and still come out on top of the Soto. They have $100 million in the pocket. Like, I don't think they're actually going to do that, though.
No. I don't know where they'll pivot to, but if they want to, they'll have the funds to spend.
It would be funny if you went to the...
Funny?
I mean, it would be, yes, if he went to the Yankees. If the 2017 Astro went to the New York Yankees, that'd be funny.
Yeah, 2019 went there, they'd have minded so much. If a 2017 goes there, we all know.
Yeah, if it's Kyle Tucker, they don't care.
Well, Garrett Cole.
Him too.
They're not going to care. They're not going to care if a 17 Astro goes there. Alex Bregman, Altuve's the problem, not Bregman. We all justify what we need to justify.
It would be funny.
It'd be if we
and the Astros trade for Cody Bellinger.
Yeah, that one.
I'm in on the Cody Bellinger to the Astros just for the introductory press conference
and how things will go
just
down.
Just for Chandler
here.
Rome to raise his hand for the first time at the introductory press conference.
Well, there's no one really left. If Bregman goes, how many people are left from the team that would call him to carpet? Like Altuve's not going to do it.
Lance McCullers as well.
You got to play. I know there are more video of you throwing stuff that aren't.
Yeah.
That it and throwing a baseball at someone who's not a batter or anyone actually. You're just throwing it at a wall.
Yeah.
He's got to play to call anyone out.
How many innings?
I need. Oh. Huh. Before he can call out Bellinger?
Yes. Like, does he need to make three straight starts without issue, without being scratched?
I need five starts. And then if a
ERA lower than five,
sure. And then if a reporter wants to ask him a question about Bellinger being on the team, then I'm willing to listen. Then I'm willing to listen. If not, particularly if Bellinger's playing well,
oh yeah,
I don't want to hear from McCullers. Yeah. All right, we're over it. The team signed him; they're over it. There ain't anyone left but you and Altuve. And Altuve ain't saying nothing. He's probably broken hearted because Bregman's not here. I don't want to hear from McCullers. I'm not saying quiet down and go sell some coffee.
Yeah, shut up and pitch. That's what you're saying.
But you can talk about a lot of things. You love an animal. You want to? I don't know if that UFC podcast is still going on. But we don't speak about things when we're not able to play. Mm. And I don't think he would say anything. I don't think he was asking him a question about that anyway. He's not that vocal. Was he that vocal back then? That was a Correa thing.
Yeah. I think it would be different if it was Correa. Because Correa was actually going back and forth.
Well, Correa was still here. Then Bregman would have already been signed because the Astros had changed their philosophy on things. So Bellinger wouldn't be here. And we'll see if the Astros don't have to worry about bringing in someone a lot of you guys hated. And they believe Bregman is still a possibility. We'll hear more from Dana Brown. He spoke about potential replacements, particularly the in-house options, and whether they could go that way if Alex Bregman isn't an Astro and he's playing somewhere else in 2025. So we got a lot to get to. We got more quarterback news in college football. A quarterback has announced he's returning. So if you didn't like the quarterback draft in 2025, it gets a little weaker. So we'll get to that. But first, I want to talk about Super Happy Incredible Toys. And the name says it all. If you want to feel great and you want to feel a little nostalgic, that's the place you go. The spots you can hear, and they're all about remembering. And it's Christmas time, so whether you're buying for a kid or maybe a big kid, that's the place you go to. You could like Transformers. You could like Marvel action figures. Maybe you're a DC person, or maybe you're into more classic stuff that you can't find anywhere else. They're going to have it there. I went there maybe now 3 weeks ago. They're in the Heights, 221 East 11th Street in the Heights. And they got it all from Street Fighter stuff to Star Wars. It's all there for you to check it out. And they kind of source it from the community. They buy from the community. They sell from the community. So if that interests you, they'll take care of you there as well. They have their Facebook page. You can check them out. Just type in Super Happy Incredible Toys or go to Instagram, Super Happy Incredible Toys, and check out all they have to offer. It's a place to meet up. It's kind of a casual place. You want to just walk around and check everything out and see what there is to purchase. It's great for you. The people are there that are great, too. They understand the toys. They understand the lore. They understand the history. It's all there for you at Super Happy Incredible Toys.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tare, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.